Item 61, authorize a contract with Legacy Good Samaritan Medical Center for a mobile healthcare services pilot program for post-hospital care services for at-risk patients.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is really an exciting pilot agreement. I'm sorry it had to be the last item, and the Chief Burns had to patiently wait. But this is very exciting because it is a collaboration between Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital and Portland Fire and Rescue to reduce readmissions to the hospital system. And it will provide and involve our people, firefighters, providing evaluation and for people once they've been discharged from the hospital. And the goal is to avoid readmissions to the hospital, which all of us don't want to see, the individuals don't want to see, and it's a cost to all of us. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to Chief Ken Burns, who's worked hard on this agreement, to maybe provide a little more detail.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, and other commissioners. Thank you for your time today. I'll try to be brief. We, Portland Fire and Rescue's working on being important in all aspects, not just responding to 911. We feel we have a critical role in low acuity, alternative destinations, really working on the total health of our community. So the pilot program that we're asking you to consider and adopt today is a pilot program with Legacy Sam Good Health. The hospital plan is a partnership with us that will have a single person coming out of our EMS office go to pre-designated patients' homes and with the attempt to make sure that they're okay once they're discharged from the hospital. We're going to be focusing on diabetes, congestive heart failure, and COPD, obstructed pulmonary disease. So it'll be a single focus, a person from our office. It's a six-month trial. There is a revenue reimbursement that could be up to $50,000 over that six-month period. Of course, those are based on home visits. Home visits are targeted to be four home visits per patient. We're really
Is that a cap? Is that why it's up to $50,000? Is that the maximum that we could be reimbursed?
Yeah, for there's a fee per visit, and the idea is we're really filling the gap. There is some home health care nurses. There's other avenues for these individuals 2 or 3 weeks, a month out after they're discharged. We are going to be the immediate gap. We're going to get to their homes within 24 to 48 hours of being discharged. We're going to meet with the patient before they're discharged with the discharge nurse and make sure everybody understands what the plan is. So we have potential increased revenue. It will depend on the capacity of that person that's assigned to this position. We have great potential to even reach out to other hospitals to gather more partnerships.
Chief, I have a question. And the goal seems to be to go upstream and get into prevention.
Absolutely.
So I think people would be interested knowing of the folks that you're going to target for these follow-up visits, what's the likelihood in the first couple of weeks of their discharge that they'd be calling 911 and then get a visit by a firefighter and an ambulance service so that we can kind of compare what we may be preventing by doing some upstream work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of these set of diseases, depending on the hospital, anywhere from 10 to 15% of those discharged are going back into the hospital. So us going to their homes will definitely have a reduction of 911 calls. The same individual who's going to be readmitted could be calling 911 at 2 a.m. And we can head that off at 2 p.m. in the afternoon with a scheduled visit.
And let's be clear, because you use some highfalutin language around low acuity and alternative destinations, and I'm still not sure what you meant, but to bring it to the human scale, because once upon a time I had the honor for 6 months of being in Dan's shoes. On some of those visits, what firefighters are learning is that people don't have their meds or haven't taken their meds or have some other barrier which a firefighter and a team can help address. Could you give us the sort of human scale on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you picture going into someone's home, I've already met the person at the hospital, so I understand what the plan is. But when someone's discharged, it can be confusing. So when our member gets to their home, they're going to check for their meds, but they're also going to do a home fire safety inspection. They're going to, do they have a smoke detector? What's their living conditions look like? Do they have food? Do they need other services that maybe haven't yet been brought into the system? So it really is a global approach, not only for getting the person the right care at the right time, but making sure that other partnerships are brought into the situation.
So I have several questions. You just said 50,000, but Exhibit B says 24,000. So yes. I was just wondering if that was a typo.
Well, so this has been about a two-year project, and we started out with a three-month pilot. And that's been the conversation. What we're hoping to do now is make it a six-month pilot. So in essence, it's $24,000 over a three-month period. In order to get all of the contracts and your approval and get everybody on to actually start the pilot itself would be 6 months, and we're hoping to get about 5 months worth of activity, just lining up all the other contracts and all the players. So essentially 2 months or 2 years ago, it was $24,000 for 3 months worth of work. And then we've decided, quite frankly, that 3 months and this type of a pilot may not be enough to really gather the data that you all would be looking for.
So do we need to amend Exhibit B then?
Yeah, I mean, if you feel that you need to, I want to get this pilot going. So I can go back to Good Sam and say, hey, let's go ahead and go with our original 3 months. But in my recommendation, it's a six-month pilot.
Well, it's pretty easy. Yeah. It's just amend it for six months and change the number to 50. So with your permission, Commissioner Saltzman, should we do that?
Sure.
So move that amendment.
For a second.
I'll second it.
Could the amendment is to change the number in Exhibit B to 50,000.
Does this 50, jeopardize 000. The emergency basis for this?
But we can still do it with we are all unanimous on all the votes.
So we have a motion. We have
another way to do it would be you could just come back in 3 months and put something on consent to have it keep going, because I certainly agree that 3 months is probably not enough.
Yeah, I would. We want to get this program up and running. Hopefully today with a vote. So
okay, so I'll just withdraw my motion and come back
we'll
in 3 months because I
back
do
in
agree.
3 months. And that's fine.
Motion's
so
withdrawn.
It says that you just said that there's one provider within Portland Fire and Rescue. Mm-hmm. So why does it refer to paramedics and nurses, both in the plural?
Because the individual that are some of our neighboring agencies have paramedics doing some of the home visits, while others have a nurse doing home visits. So in the contract, we left it open so that we can find the right person. It could be a paramedic or a nurse that's assigned to this partnership.
How many nurses do we have in Portland Fire and Rescue?
We currently have three. Yeah. One of them is in our office right now. Our health and wellness is a nurse, and we have another nurse that's in active status from Washington. So we have three right now.
And who's the physician that would oversee this?
Dr. John Ju has already signed a few months ago a letter acknowledging that we would work under his medical support.
And what about the issue of patient privacy and HIPAA? It seems that the contract says the records are going to stay at Portland Fire and Rescue. Do you already have protocols for making sure that medical issues are, for instance, not the public record?
Mm-hmm. We act under HIPAA compliance at this time, and the medical records per se will be responsible for Good Sam, but our interactions would still be confidential also.
And is your expectation that the union will ask for this to be another premium pay assignment, or is it what they're supposed to be doing anyway?
I believe the union's position is they want us to be involved in all aspects of the community health. I think that they will want this to be a represented position, and there's both sides of why it would be good. When I talk about home fire safety and getting acceptance and up and running programs, having a sworn member does have some benefits.
Are the nurses members of the union?
Two of the three that we have today are.
I would ask you to take back to the union that if you're an emergency medical provider and or a nurse, that is your job and you should not have to have a premium pay for taking on this kind of approach, because I think, Commissioner, it is like the way of the future. So I think we should not be setting the precedent that just because it's a new way of giving service, it's really not a new service. I'd just like you to take that back. Does this duplicate or replace the county health visiting services?
The county has some services that are contracted out to other hospitals. But right now, Legacy Emmanuel has signed a similar contract with Metro West Ambulance to have paramedics come in, and Tualatin Valley has a contract with Providence St. V. So the hospitals are actually looking for more nimble responses. So the county would come in later, but not in this first two-week period that we're talking about. We can go in at 8 o'clock at night. We can go in on Sunday. We can go in on these types of conditions.
And is there an issue with that, with the county-represented employees, that we might be poaching some of their work?
No, the similar programs with similar agencies and hospitals have already had conversations with the Nursing Association and realize in certain cases we will actually be referring some of our patients to more of a long-term nurse home follow-up. So we're really filling the gap, not taking their roles.
Thank you. And my final question is, supposing one of the patients in this program does get into an emergency situation, calls 911, or feels that they need a 911, whether they are or not, is there going to be a mechanism to make sure that the nurse or EMS person who's been providing the care is looped in on that visit?
If they somehow get readmitted in between those visits, they will be part of that follow-up. But if you're asking if during the home visit there's a critical need, calling 911 and getting them transported will be critical. So we won't we will provide life-saving measures during the home visit, but the intent is to recognize declining health of someone who's going to relapse.
Right. I would like to work with you and the 911 center, because I think the person may feel like they have an emergency, or maybe it is one, but it would be helpful to then loop in the provider who's been checking on this person once a week
to make
sure that the right background information is given back to the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. The protocol, we've already have a protocol written, and it is to contact the primary care physician or the emergency room physician of that hospital to give them a recap of what our individual is going through at this time, and then to take their recommendation. But at the end of the day, the overall condition of do I transport or not, or do I call 911, we will retain that responsibility. We'll take the advice of their doctor, but we will still take the, won't put the city, we'll make sure they get the right care.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking if the one provider does happen to be on shift at the time that a 911 call comes in, it would be good if we can set up a protocol to make sure that that person, who would be a familiar person to the patient, would
absolutely
be able to help with that. I'm just struck. Yep. This is a fabulous program. I'm glad you're doing it. For $24,000 for 20 patients, that's $4,000. Right now, it's $2,000 for 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, for 3 months, that's evidence of how very expensive it is when patients continue to cycle through the emergency room and elsewhere, that the hospital is reaching out to us and wanting to fund at a fairly significant level.
Yeah.
And what will happen to this, the money that's received? Is it going into a particular budget area, or is that part of the Portland Fire's budget proposal?
You will see a budget item for this position to be long-term. Now, and the person who, when we decide who's going to take on this project, they will come out of normal responses, so they'll have to be replaced. So some of this revenue, especially initially, will offset their cost.
But you're, I hadn't understood that you're not going to do this with current staffing. You're going to hire somebody especially for it.
But it would be someone, essentially someone who's riding a fire engine today, and they'd respond 24/7. Then they would be come into our office, and in 40 hours a week, they will be doing this project. Well, that person on the fire engine needs to be replaced by a traveler. So these funds will offset that cost of that traveler replacing the person on the engine.
Well, I am concerned about that. Maybe now's not the time because we're all tired, but as fire calls continue to go down, you and the rest of the council have been exploring how could we use existing personnel to give other services. So I'm a bit concerned to hear that this is not within existing staff, that it would be an extra person.
Yeah, I think there's room for that to grow. I think we're looking to prove the concept that we can have one person connect, build relationships, prove the concept works, and work up a communication protocol to have individuals on fire engines then have to report back to certain physicians. Right now, our quite frankly, our communication systems, our data systems, you know, our iPads, being able to link back to patient history and connect with a physician is still yet to be developed. And I believe, I love where your thoughts are going, but I think this is the first step to get there.
I have one question, if I could, Chief. So one of the things that I like about this program is you're getting a firefighter who's a trusted person in uniform into someone's home, and we've for a long time been thinking about how to leverage the fact that particularly for older adults, they'll be resistant to lots of people coming into their homes, but a firefighter is someone that's usually trusted, can get in. I'm delighted to hear that in addition to providing the care, there's going to be a survey to make sure other safety devices are functioning. So if there's a smoke detector, are the batteries up to date, things like that. That's been a longstanding desire of Commissioner Saltzman to bundle these services. Mm-hmm. So the question I have for you is, assuming you're doing follow-up care for an older adult, and in the course of providing services, there is a concern about potential abuse and neglect, mm-hmm. what will the training and protocol be in terms of some referral at that point?
Yeah, the training is in place. We're mandatory reporters. We have actual names and faces of Adult Protective Services at the county level. That's where we loop in with, not an email. That's a phone call to an individual at Multnomah County that says, here's what I'm seeing, here's what I've experienced. What do you have to help us in that arena? So that'll be very much part of the portfolio, kind of that safety net, if you will.
I have two quick questions. What is the qualifying criteria other than at risk for this program? Is it an age? Is it income?
It's a multiple of factors. We are letting the hospital determine the candidate for the program. It's voluntary, of course, but we will focus on those three diseases that are most likely to have a relapse, and that's congestive heart failure. It'll be asthma. It'll be someone who has diabetes. It'll be those kind of chronic illnesses, if you will. It won't be insurance-related. It will be some of these folks have already relapsed 3 or 4 times, and this would be a different approach to take the care to their homes.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is, will patients who are homeless and being not released to a home where you can visit them be served through this program somehow?
I look to build on that in the future. Having a destination, having a home that says, I will be at your location. Now, a home can mean many things to many people. It could actually be a shelter. I just need you to meet me somewhere tomorrow at 3:00.
So we're
looking more of a broader spectrum. The more mobile homeless might pose challenges. We have another program that we're kind of connecting high utilizers that way, and those individuals are being sought out regardless of, we will actually, quite frankly, look in a radius to try to find them. But this particular program, we need to set up scheduled appointments. That'll be a challenge.
Understood. Thank you. It's a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Is there any public testimony on this matter?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Thanks, Chief.
Good afternoon.
I'm Jay Wilkins, and I support these kind of things. For the simple reason is, if you have fire and rescue basically has equipment that they don't use unless there's a fire, it just sits or they don't use it. This summer, 2016, I had an experience where some homeless guy was begging for money outside of a Dollar Tree on 82nd. And luckily, the fire department arrived about the same time the policeman or the county sheriff. And, without that, the EMTs, especially a woman, came out and said, are you hungry? Are you feel okay? And one of the women gave the guy some crackers. I was just waiting for the police to throw the guy on the ground, and that was it. So it softened up the situation, made it less confrontational. Again, you don't use nurses and you don't use fire department people at all unless there's a big fire. So why are they just sitting there doing nothing? Certainly the fires have more priority. And actually, sadly enough, the person was the county sheriffs did, handcuffed the guy, but it would have been a lot worse if the EMT, especially the woman EMT, had to sit there and was more maternal, asking if he's hungry, why is he there? Actually, in doing that, it advertises the people in the store why he was there in the first place.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Charles Bridge Crane Johnson. It snuck in there, the last few words of the Chief's testimony, that before Commissioner Udaly and Mayor Wheeler came to this council, we also initiated a pilot program because we know that some people are so distressed that they're highly reliant upon 911. And although it just got mentioned, we haven't heard any feedback, but I haven't seen anything come back to the council in the way of a report on effectiveness of that. And I hope that we can see that in the best context, not just how much money does it save Legacy Emmanuel, but how do we grow that program so that there won't be another funeral like Miss Batt's funeral. And it was extremely important that Miss Udaly raised the issue of who's being served. In reality, we don't know because it's reliant upon how the patient at the hospital describes their discharge situation. And if you're clear thinking when you go to the hospital, you just try and say whatever you think will get you the best care and the best outcome. So I hope that you'll be able to fully fund this program and that the chief will and the unionized staff will find a way to grow it so that we're getting the wisest expenditures of public dollars, whether they're healthcare dollars or emergency service dollars, so that we can get so we can have another Vision Zero. You know, occasionally there are irrecoverable situations where people's heart surgeries just don't work. But if we can grow this pilot program so that we have another kind of Vision Zero, where a year from now we're talking about in Portland, we have the lowest death rate for people discharged from the hospital anywhere in the United States. That is the goal of a program like this. It's an audacious goal, but I think it's the kind of things that you want to take on. And remember that we don't really know what the housing stability of these people are that they're going to be in this program. We certainly don't want anybody to be excluded and put at higher risk of death because they failed to say, I have a house instead of I don't have a house while they were doing their discharge planning. So that's going to be a very tricky issue with the number of houseless people we have here. And it's something that I, dealing with houseless community, am going to have to tell them, well, you might reduce your risk of death if you lie to your discharge person at the hospital and say that you live somewhere. So let's see if we can address that issue. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other public testimony on this matter? Is there any other comment from the council? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to call the roll.
Fritz. Well, congratulations, Chief and Commissioner Saltzman. This is definitely another step forward. I will be looking for how do we do it efficiently with our current staff rather than starting a whole new service that we may or may not be the best to provide, but it's great to have this pilot. Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Dan, congratulations on this. And Chief Burns, thank you for your presentation. I will generally support any proposal that goes upstream and provides cost-effective and compassionate care and that saves us money. And it's one of the reasons why in this budget cycle, I think we need to take a sharper look at funding permanent supportive housing units. The reality is the highest cost delivery system in the world is the current system, which is broken, providing healthcare services to people that don't have homes. When we marry homes and services, we not only give people a better quality of life, but we save a lot of money in high-cost, unnecessary services. Again, any program which goes upstream and provides compassionate care at a good value is something we should support. And I applaud you, Dan, for leveraging the fact that once a firefighter, trusted firefighter in uniform, is invited into someone's home, they can also do a survey to make sure other safety things are working in someone's home, which I think is a real benefit. Thanks for your leadership. Aye.
Saltzman.
I want to thank my colleagues. I think you all asked some really good questions. So I think these are all questions that we need to continue to ponder. This is a pilot program, so we're going to learn things as we do it. I want to thank Chief Burns for his commitment to this program and also Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital.
and both organizations' commitments to improving the well-being of our residents. And this is a good start. And I also want to thank the Firefighter Union for their willingness to go along with this as well. Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Oh, my turn? Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for bringing this forward. Chief Burns, thank you very much. I want to echo my colleague's gratitude, and I'm very hopeful that this program actually works out. Anything we can do to get people the care they need without readmittance to the ER, I think, is a great thing. So I look forward to seeing how this contract unfolds, and as I say, I hope there's a lot of success in the months ahead. So aye. With that, the contract is approved. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. We are actually adjourned now until Thursday at 2 p.m. Thank you, everybody.